This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Canada, China, and the United States are at the center of an international crisis that hinges on trade, technology, and concerns about espionage. On Tuesday, Meng Wanzhou, chief financial officer of the Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei, was released on $7.5 million bail. Meng is accused of violating United States sanctions against Iran, and she was arrested on December 1st by Canadian authorities acting on behalf of U.S. investigators. In response to heightened tensions and the detainment of a former Canadian diplomat in China earlier this week, the State Department issued this warning on Tuesday.
United States travel advisory for China suggests that anyone exercise caution when traveling to China, based in part on the potential for American citizens visiting and residing in China to be arbitrarily interrogated and detained.
Looming in the backdrop of the investigation is an escalating tech war and the fate of a truce on trade between the U.S. and China. President Donald Trump has even hinted that he would intervene in the case if it would help the U.S. on trade. I have two guests with me now to help me understand how all of this will play out. Isaac Stone Fish is in the studio with me now. He's a senior fellow with the Asia Society Center on U.S.-China Relations. Welcome back to the show, Isaac.
Thank you.
And Charles Arthur is the author of Cyber Wars, Hacks That Shocked the Business World, and former tech editor for The Guardian. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So, Isaac, let's start with you. Why is it that we still don't have any clarity on what the actual charges are? And what do we know exactly about the U.S. investigation into Huawei?
So we don't have clarity in part because this is a very, very complicated case, and these things do tend to take a long time to come out. I think also, in a way, lacking clarity is in the U.S. and Canadian advantage. I mean, it's unfortunate to say because this should be a purely legal case, but it has certainly been politicized by the Americans, by the Canadians, and certainly by the Chinese. And I think there's a hope on the governments of both sides, broadly speaking, that this can get resolved before we get too many details about the allegations.
Let's talk a little bit about what we mean when we say sanctions against Iran. Are these Trump administration sanctions or sanctions from a previous administration?
These are old. And I think part of the reason people worry about the timing is not only that it happened exactly when Trump and Xi were meeting, but also because this has been a case that's been boiling for quite some time. And it's certainly possible that the Justice Department, acting independently, just felt like it had gathered enough information to ask Canada to detain Meng very recently. But these kind of coincidences, I think, happen a lot less than we think.
Charles, I want to bring you in here. How typical is it for a company or an individual to essentially be caught this way for sanctions violations?
Well, ZTE, which is another Chinese company, was dinged pretty hard by the Obama administration for violating sanctions over selling telecommunications equipment to Iran. And actually, this whole case with this arrest stems from some of the documents that the U.S. seized from ZTE then. There are some documents dating back to 2011, internal ZTE documents, which are marked top secret, that which are now published on U.S. government websites as part of this sort of evidence against ZTE, where ZTE is sort of discussing how it's going to do this, the sales of its things to Iran, because they know that there are big U.S. sanctions against doing this. And they're saying, well, we can use what's called a cutout company. You can have a sort of an intermediate company to which you sell your gear, which then sells it on to Iran. That's actually, you know, that breaks sanctions. That's what you're not allowed to do. And part of this mentions a company called F7, which is better capitalized than ZTE, Huawei fits that, which they say they're doing this cutout company thing, and they're doing really well with it. And some more evidence has surfaced since then, which shows that Reuters had some stories about this back in 2012, 2013, showing exactly this. They followed a paper trail. They found a cutout company. Huawei was involved very tightly in it, had shareholders in it, and it was sanctions busting. So in that respect, this case to me looks like a sort of, you know, almost open and shut. You know, you have a really good paper trail where you have Huawei breaking sanctions. And in that sense, I think that it's dangerous to politicize it. I think it's dangerous for Trump to suggest that some sort of deal could be done, because in that sense, you undermine the rule of law. If you're going to have sanctions, then you need to apply them.
Well, and Charles, the president did tell Reuters earlier this week that he would consider intervening in the case. And he said, and I'm quoting here, "Whatever's good for this country, I would do." And you're saying that that's a risk?
Well, I think it's a risk to the rule of law. If you're going to have laws where you apply sanctions and you say that people are not allowed to break sanctions, and if your Department of Justice pulls together documentary evidence showing that someone has been involved in breaking those sanctions, then, you know, do you have laws or do you not have laws? It seems to me that's the fundamental question that you have to deal with. It's not a question of, you know, is it this for that, really? It seems to me you should be talking about, do we actually apply the laws of the land, or do we just let these things slide because it's inconvenient?
Isaac, I want to bring you in here for a second to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts on whether this arrest itself was politically motivated?
I think the arrest itself was certainly politically motivated, and that does not mean that the U.S. is facing any additional erosion of the rule of law. Arrests get politically motivated in previous administrations all over the world, and you know, it's not necessarily such a happy thing to compare the U.S. to some other unsavory regimes that do that more often. But I think the issue and part of the reason this case became such a big story is that Huawei as a company can break the law without the detention of its CFO. That's a really large difference between just saying, okay, Huawei broke the law and we need to detain the daughter of the company's founder, the purported potential successor to the company's founder, and we need to do it in a very public way at a very public time.
Charles, the Chinese government detained businessman and Canadian citizen Michael Spavor this week, and they had previously detained another Canadian who is the ex-diplomat Michael Kovrig. Beijing is saying that the organization Kovrig works for is not properly registered, but it appears that these arrests are retaliation against Canada for its involvement in Meng's arrest. Is that fair?
Certainly, they do look like retaliation against Canada for its cooperation in the detention of the Huawei chief financial officer. It's rather hard to read them as anything else. And certainly, I mean, Isaac's point that, you know, the choice of who you arrest, that's certainly politically motivated. And there would certainly be many other people in Huawei who would be changing planes in all sorts of countries that the U.S. has an extradition treaty with, who they could have chosen. So, yes, it's certainly making a point to Huawei about who you choose to arrest. So in that sense, whoever was behind the decision to make that particular arrest, that's a political consideration because Huawei is a very big company. They're the biggest maker of telecommunications equipment in the world, bigger than Ericsson, bigger than Nokia. So certainly the U.S. is making a point here, quite above the legal point of actually you broke sanctions law. There's a very important element to this. So China's, yeah, looking to retaliate. To us, from our perspective, sure, they look like trumped up charges. I mean, I'm sure China could find ways to justify it, but the timing all looks rather peculiar. And it certainly is a concern that the people get used as pawns in this way, in the sort of a diplomatic shuffling. It sort of feels almost like a Cold War, that we have a technological Cold War going on. And this is like the film Bridge of Spies, where people are going to be sort of exchanged dawn across sort of neutral ground where, you know, we give you a CFO for a couple of, you know, lower level people from Canada.
I want to ask, the United States has had longstanding issues with this company, and I want to play a clip. This is National Security Advisor John Bolton responding to the arrest in an interview with NPR last week.
We've had enormous concern for years in this country about the practice of Chinese firms to use stolen American intellectual property to engage in forced technology transfers. So not respecting this particular arrest, but Huawei is one company we've been concerned about. There are others as well.
Isaac, can you give us a little sense of the backstory here, this longstanding tension between Huawei and the U.S.?
So for a very long time, Huawei has been suspected of basically stealing a lot of U.S. technology and of either putting backdoors in U.S. technology or having the potential to put backdoors into U.S. technology.
When we say backdoors, what do we mean?
The ability for all the information that flows through the backbone that Huawei creates, the ability for that to all be seen by, taken by, analyzed by Beijing. So the real risk...
So let me stop you right there. Yeah, that mean my cell phone that's potentially made with pieces from this company is being... I mean, let's talk... I really think a lot of Americans want to understand what that means.
I think... So every piece of electronic equipment that anyone uses anywhere in the world is not safe. It's not secure. It's not, you can't have a phone conversation and assume no one's listening. We're past that as a society. The issue with Huawei, the issue with a lot of Chinese companies is that we have a lot of mistrust for the ruling Communist Party of China, and we don't believe that they will not use the data in nefarious ways, that they won't listen in on sensitive conversations. And yes, we've had pretty big revelations here from Snowden about what the U.S. government does. And having spent most of my life in the U.S. And the rest of it in China, about 7 years in China, I do trust the U.S. government a lot more, even this current deeply problematic one, to do fairly benign things with our data and with our information as opposed to what Beijing does.
Charles, if the U.S. does prove that Huawei violated sanctions, what would that mean for that company?
It could mean serious sanctions against them, financial penalties. Possibly its CFO would be locked up in the US. So, like I say, I could imagine some sort of almost prisoner exchange coming out of that. But I mean, the concerns that John Bolton expressed there, I mean, John Bolton, some people find a bit extreme, but there have been similar concerns expressed in Australia, in New Zealand, in the UK by security chiefs who are not usually given to hyperbole. So the concerns about Huawei that Isaac expressed there are actually echoed in other parts of the world. So this is a serious time, actually, as we move to a new technology, 5G, much faster networking. Huawei is at the front there, but a lot of countries and security chiefs are very nervous about letting them get the lead and install equipment on that.
And just want to really quickly, I'm sure there are other countries out there that are also concerned about Huawei's tentacles, if you will. Is that right, Isaac?
That is. We have some news coming out about Japan, and recently New Zealand, the UK, Australia have all been pretty worried about what Huawei is doing.
And we'll be paying close attention. Isaac Stonefish is Global Opinions columnist for The Washington Post. Isaac, thank you.
Thank you.
And Charles Arthur is author of Cyber Wars, Hacks That Shocked the Business World. Charles, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.